Is your money not sure what to do with itself right now? At Ally, they'll help it save for the future with their smart savings tools. Bucket your money for the things that matter most. Analyze your spending and save automatically. All on top of a competitive rate. For all things money, you deserve an Ally. Visit ally.com/savings for more info. Ally, do it right. Ally Bank, member FDIC.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
And we welcome you back to the program here on this, I've lost track of what day it is. I think it's Thursday. Great to have you on. And we will continue taking your phone calls and more guests to come as we roll on. Let's get back to the calls. And Logan is up next. Hey, Logan.
Hey, Paul. How's it going today?
It is going great. Thank you.
Glad to hear. I don't know. I'm just exhausted, man. I'll be honest with you. I stopped in to the gas and sip today to quote a George Jones lyric, and stopped in, and I walk in, and I'm the only person wearing a mask in the whole place. And, you know, I think you know our governor just mandated that as a requirement yesterday. And with the numbers exploding, you know, I can't believe people are so ignorant. And I just get upset. I mean, I'm on Facebook, and I have people telling me that, you know, mask, or it's bad to wear a mask. And they give me all kinds of excuses, like you can't carry a concealed weapon without a mask, or with a mask, you can't carry a concealed weapon. I'm like, you know, what's more important, you know, being armed when you go out, or protecting yourself and, you know, other people? It's just very disheartening. And people wonder why we're at this situation right now. And, you know, every day that this goes on, it just makes me less and less sure that we're going to have a season. I just can't see how it's going to happen. And I hate to be the negative person. I don't want to be that way. I don't want to get pessimistic, but
yeah,
I talked to
I talked to a friend of mine in Alabama today, and he said literally nobody is wearing masks. Nobody. And by the way, I don't – people can do whatever they want to do. I know the airlines. I just saw something. Delta has literally said that if a passenger is not wearing a mask, they will not be on the flight. And I'm really not sure. Yeah, again, you're not being punished. I had somebody helping me today at my house, and with some equipment I had, then, you know, we're both wearing masks, and because that's what you're supposed to do. I'm not making a political or ideological statement. You heard Dr. Sag yesterday. He implored people to wear a mask. This guy is one of the leading infectious disease physicians in the country.
Exactly. I don't know why it's become a political thing. I don't understand. It's just
hold on a second, Logan. There's a specific reason why it has become political.
Well, we know that. I mean, I didn't want to bring it up, but yeah.
I don't want to bring it up either, but it's a fact. It starts from the top down.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's pretty disappointing. So I don't know. I hate to call it and be the pessimist, but no, I always appreciate, you know, your show, and, you know, just being able to talk to you, get you through a lot.
I want people, you know what I want more than anything? I want people to be real. And that, you know, that goes for callers, that goes for guests. I mean, I am sick and tired of hearing people say, I certainly want to see a football. I mean, everyone wants to see a football season, Logan. I mean, do you know anyone who doesn't?
Not around here, Paul. I don't know anybody
around
here.
And what I like about this phone call here, if we are being realistic about it, if the situation doesn't get any better, and the virus situation gets away, whether Alex Berenson thinks it's real or whether Dr. Sag thinks it's real, it's still going to equal the same thing. No football. It doesn't matter what side you're on. The only thing that matters, I think, is that we get to from point A to point B.
That's correct. I'm with you on that 100%. I just want to mention one thing about the Mississippi players. I'm really don't understand why the governor had so much pushback against changing the flag. The only thing bigger than politics in the South is football. So it's a no-win situation for this guy. So I don't understand. He needs to just go ahead and get on the right side of history.
I hear you. Hey, thank you very, very much for the call. Always appreciate it. Let's continue with more calls. And how about Ron in Kentucky? Hey, Ron.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today, bud?
I'm doing great.
Well, I think you and Logan pretty well covered what I was going to call about. But, you know, I'll be so glad when people start cutting up and joking and teasing each other about the game last night. I miss all that stuff on the show. It seems like all of a sudden, I mean, everything's doom and gloom. But answer me, Paul, do you think the people in America are actually trying to get rid of this virus? I mean, the public.
No, I don't.
I don't either. And I think Big Brother or the law or and all these businesses are going to have to step in. You know, they say, well, it's an infringement on my right to wear, make me wear a mask. How about car seat belts? Is that an infringement on their rights? I think if they get caught out in public, they ought to pay a fine. And I think all these department stores, Walmart, Target, all these businesses that are open, even sports stadiums, need to post signs, no mask, no admittance.
No, it's a,
every fan the governors
of a couple of states are now insisting on it. Governor Abbott in Texas, the governor in North Carolina, but I haven't heard the governor of Mississippi. I haven't heard the governor of Alabama. We had the governor of Arkansas on a couple weeks ago. He said everything there was copacetic. John is up next in Alabama. Hello, John.
Hey, Paul. I just wanted to ask you, with all these rioters and looters and everything, just how far are you going to let them push you? You going to let them tear down the George Washington's monument? Because George was a slave owner. Going to let them destroy the Lincoln Memorial? Because Lincoln was a slave owner. Going to let them blow up Mount Rushmore? Just how far are you going to let them go? Somebody better stop them.
John, it's really, it's really. I don't have. I mean, I'm a talk show host. I don't have a lot to do with anything other than pushing buttons on this talk show every night.
I understand, but I'm just putting it out there. You know.
And by the way, I don't know if you're blaming the right people.
When you come up here and you're a mayor and you stand there with your hands in your pockets and you let them take over your city, somebody up above, you know what I mean?
How many cities in America right now are under siege?
Well, let's see now. How many times have they gone in and tore down statues or
And by the way, who is that? Who is they?
Memorial or
who is they, John?
Well, like I said, the rioters and the looters.
Well,
Antifa and Soros? Soros is the one that's paying Antifa.
You're talking about George Soros?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's the one that paid for the buses to put them in and bring them here. Start a ride, set the bricks out on the corners of the streets. I mean, we can't let these things happen. We've already let them come in, and they're abusing our police. They're throwing bottles at them. I mean, we shooting them. Innocent citizens, 3-year-old gets shot. I mean, somebody has to step up and say, hey, enough.
So, John, as we wind this phone call down, what would your recommendation be?
My recommendation has got to start at the local level, and it's got to work its way up. And it has to be pushed to the point to where it's going to stop. That's it in a nutshell.
Okay. Hey, thanks for the call.
All right.
We're up against a break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Let's change gears here a little bit and have a conversation about something we're all been talking about. And we are delighted to welcome Victoria Jackson to the program. Of course, she is very well known. She's an educator. She's written a column for the Boston Globe entitled Cancel the College Football Season Now. She is a professor, a clinical assistant professor at Arizona State. Victoria, thank you very much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me, Paul.
So great to have you. Before we get to your piece, I would like to talk about your background a little bit, and because I'm sure you have received quite a bit of reaction already to your thoughts.
Sure, thanks. Well, I'm primarily an academic. I teach at Arizona State. I care a lot about college sports. I do a lot of work with Sun Devil Athletics, and I teach sports history courses at ASU.
Which brings us to the issue at hand, and that is, and that is this debate that we keep having here every single day. We're talking to the commissioner of the SEC a little bit later on. Everyone is trying to get college football. Everybody's trying to get all sports back, as you well know. Why college football? Why don't you think it should exist? Not exist, but why don't you think it should be played this year?
Well, there's certainly and understandably a preoccupation with getting the college football season back, getting athletes back, making sure they're safe and healthy. And I fear that preoccupation is a distraction from what really is a ticking time bomb. I see college football as this thing that schools need to have a reckoning with, and this is a great opportunity for that. You know, should schools continue to host a student activity that can cause brain injury and contribute to chronic traumatic encephalopathy? The very robust and growing critique of amateurism, player grievances and criticisms of that, the money has been accelerating, and so that tension has really reached a breaking point. And then this problem, which actually Bubba Cunningham, the athletic director at UNC, has admitted in a conversation with Dennis Dodd, that there's this problem that the colleges are the sole pathway to the NFL. Basketball is kind of sorting itself out with these alternative pathways to the pros, but that's not the case with football. And so do colleges really want to play this role? I think this is the opportunity in this crisis is to call a timeout and take a year to figure out what this is going to look like moving forward.
We're talking to Victoria Jackson, who, as we have mentioned, is not only a writer and a guest lecturer, a guest contributor, but someone who is very passionate. Victoria, I'm a little confused, but that's okay. I'm searching for the specific reason why we shouldn't have a college football season. I'm not sure I understand it.
Well, I think we need a reset. And my fear is that by just kind of going forward business as usual, it doesn't give us an opportunity to address systemic issues within college football in particular. First of all, racially disparate educational outcomes need to be addressed, and they simply have not been. So as one example, our reigning national champions from the SEC, Louisiana State University, you know, black men represent 4.6% of the undergraduate population at LSU, but they represent 77.6% of football and men's basketball players. But the problem here is that they're not graduating. Only a third of these black athletes are graduating. And so what is the purpose of college football? Is it serving the students? Are they getting this fair trade-off? You know, is it really a world-class education? I'm not quite sure it is. And so the opportunity here could be to spin it off and to privatize college football. I don't think fans of teams would feel any differently if they still have the same names and are still within the arm's reach of the university. And then the athletes could actually get paid in addition to having those college scholarships.
I know as somebody who is a former writer, a lot of times people write for impact, but what do you hope to accomplish with this piece?
Yeah, I'm speaking to academics and I'm speaking to university leaders. I understand that this is a huge, huge problem for people in athletic departments, having somebody like me saying, listen, we need to reconsider everything we're doing in this space. But this space is within American universities. And so, you know, so many of my colleagues, academic colleagues, think about things like institutional racism, systemic racism, civil and human rights in their work, but they don't think about the parts of their campus that might be reflective of those same kind of structural problems. And when we have, you know, predominantly white institutions with athletes who, you know, they're really serving the entertainment, marketing, and diversity functions of American higher education. Like, those academics need to be thinking about what's taking place on their campuses, too. And as far as university leaders, I do think football is this just increasing headache for them. And so, you know, this isn't a I want to burn it all down and just kill college football. It's how do we do this more responsibly and ethically for the players so that they get better compensation and also better educational opportunities and outcomes.
And Victoria, have you, not that this is the most important thing, but I am curious, have you found much support for your premise?
You know, the like-minded, so other people who pay close attention to college sports, the National College Players Association and Ramogi Huma, you know, the former UCLA football player who's been so supportive and of mm-hmm. athletes' rights movements. I have had a couple athletic people who work in intercollegiate athletics reach out and say, you know, they appreciate basically everything but the part about canceling. And I think these are just conversations that we need to be having more regularly, this kind of step back and honest appraisal of what's really taking place in these programs.
Would you not agree, though, that by playing college athletics, many young men get an opportunity to to improve their livelihood, whether it's in professional sports or in the community by the notoriety that they get, by the awareness that they get? Don't you think that would, at the end of the day, still be a pretty good thing?
Yeah, and I think, you know, what we're seeing is a kind of stifling of those opportunities. Name, image, and likeness is a really good example of that. There's no reason why students who play sports should be treated differently, categorically differently from other students. And monetizing name, image, and likeness from third parties should be something that schools should continue to embrace. They did it first after California passed the Fair Play to Play Act. We heard a lot of statements about, you know, this realization that NCAA amateur sports do need to modernize. And I fear that we've walked it all the way back to the point where it, you know, there's this effort to quash NIL rights entirely. Sports are awesome. And, you know, I fear that because it's so money driven, we're denying athletes their ability to fully embrace their economic rights as well. I think a lot of the innovative.
Victoria, I don't mean to interrupt, but
no,
I feel like
ahead.
I have to here. I mean, I read your piece and I'm trying to be as fair as I can be, but I really,
yeah.
I've yet to hear a convincing argument why stopping this current season is going to help anyone other than put not only deny opportunity for all of these young people, but create an absolute financial burden on literally everyone.
Yeah, I think the people, like, we need to be prioritizing the athletes who bring in the revenue to this space. And if that means privatizing and professionalizing football and a kind of descaling of other sports to more of a scholastic sport model, I am okay with that in the sense that for too long we've been taking advantage of athletes, you know, a disproportionate number of whom are black men. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's just going to continue unless there's a massive intervention in this way. I see college sports as a technicolor illustration of the failure of residential and educational desegregation in the U.S. And if we look at the athletes who are benefiting from college sports, it's athletes like me, Olympic sport athletes who are mostly white, who attended wealthier school districts with sports like rowing or water polo or field hockey. Right, they tend to be in wealthier white suburban neighborhoods.
Well, hold on. What about? Hold on. What about someone like Dak Prescott, who went to Mississippi State? He was a kid that had an opportunity to play, and he just signed a contract paying him $31 million a year. You don't think he benefited?
Oh, I'm not saying others don't, but if
you act like you were the only one who's benefited.
Oh, I'm speaking in broad strokes of who's more likely to benefit from the system, who's more likely to maximize both the educational and athletic opportunities in higher education. I mean, I went to the University of North Carolina, and I attended UNC during a high water mark in that huge academic fraud scandal, right? And I had no idea that was going on while I was a student. I think that's really telling. I had this idyllic college experience. I got to go pro in my sport. I went pro in school. I have a PhD. I ran professionally for a while. And I can point to athletes who played football and basketball while I was there who were funneled into fake classes, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, my perspective is informed by my experience.
But Victoria, would they have been better off not having that opportunity, though? Would they have been better off if they had nowhere to go?
Well, I think my responsibility as an educator is to make sure that opportunity really serves the students better. I think there's a lot we can fix in football and other sports as well. And, you know, now that I'm an academic and somebody who has benefited from this, I feel like it's my responsibility to think about how we can make this better for those students, to make sure we don't have academic fraud again, to make sure we can do more to increase economic opportunities for our athletes, maybe even also while they're playing a college sport. I feel passionate about that as someone who got, you know, a full scholarship and then was able to kind of navigate this in a way without the hurdles and the headaches that athletes in other sports often face.
Well, I don't think we're going to solve this today, but I'm glad. I appreciate you coming on, Victoria. I really do. I am going to give some more thought to this and see if I can join your team. I probably won't, but I hope you'll come back soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Paul. Appreciate it.
Victoria Jackson. Sometimes you just never know. We'll take a break. Commissioner of the SEC about 45 minutes away.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
We welcome you back. We've certainly had some interesting guests over the last couple of months, and Victoria was the most recent. Let's go to Augie next in New Orleans. Hey, Augie.
Hey, Paul. Paul, the aliens must be invading because there have been a lot of glitches today. A lot of static, a lot of this, a lot of that. Where's your dog when we need him?
I want to apologize. We are having a whirlwind of technical issues right now, so I have no idea what's actually going out over the air. We're working on it, as they say.
See, the rapture has invaded the Feinbaum Show. But, Paul, earlier today, the best description of you I've ever heard was you today. And I don't know if you meant it this way, but how I know you from talking and watching you. You said, hey, I'm just a radio show announcer, and all I do is push buttons. And that's exactly what you do.
It's like the old DJ from the 60s and 70s.
You have been pushing buttons all week, especially when certain people call. You know how to push their buttons. But wow, Paul, that interview with Victoria was great. What did you think about that?
I wish I could have. I didn't want to come down on her because she could only come up with three people in the entire universe who agreed with her. But I must admit, rarely do I know less at the end of an interview than I did at the beginning. But that would be one of the cases.
She had you going there, and you would ask her a question opposing her viewpoint. She would say, "Yes, I agree with you," and as she explained it, She was disagreeing with you. Now, I don't know, and she's an academic, so I give her a lot more credit than somebody who's just rambling. I think she was trying to make you look silly, Paul.
You think so?
I don't know if that was her intent. I think so. I think she was doing it in a very coy way. And if she wasn't, then she really doesn't have it all together. So I give her credit for having
The one thing she really didn't do was I didn't think she made enough sense for me to really care. So I pretty much just asked perfunctory questions because I couldn't follow it closely enough to come up with a cogent question.
Well, she made some good points. I'm not saying she didn't.
Of course. Well, she did. You know, she's an academician.
CTE, but the fact that – I think her position is that college football is basically a farm system, and not a farm system like in baseball, but a farm system that takes in kids, uses them up, and throws them out in the side. And,
well, I get all that. I mean, come on. I mean, we're both adults.
Yeah,
I do wonder though, Augie. In her world of her Alice in Wonderland world, where we would cancel college football this season, I wondered how we. I mean, I guess I was being selfish. It was going to affect me as much as anyone else.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I was about to say. Does she not realize she is, in essence, taking the food off your plate? Because we're in college football, I mean, how much longer are we going to talk about the state flag of Mississippi? And by the way, Louisiana is the only state flag with a pelican on it. So there you go. But, I mean, without college football to talk about, I mean, I think a couple more weeks of this and people are going to like, okay, we got to have something else to listen to. But she was priceless. She was worth the price of admission today. And you need to have more folks like her on.
Well, in honor of Helter Skelter, I am going to listen to the interview back, but I'm going to do it backwards.
You need to do it backwards because you might then find a message in it. But I think I understood her message, and I appreciated that viewpoint. I like viewpoints from left field. Whether I agree with them or not is irrelevant.
Well, but Augie, I thought if you study my career, I was fairly low key because I really at some point just threw something up against the wall and said, you know what, I don't even know if I care. I don't care enough to even argue. Ben is in Georgia. You're on the air. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
I wanted to start off by saying, you know, we're talking about this flag issue. I think that
you're still there? Apparently not. Rowdy is up next. Hey, Rowdy.
Hey, Paul. How are you, sir?
I am well. Thanks a lot.
Good, good. Hey, listen, earlier today you had a gentleman call in from Arkansas, and I think he was quite upset over, you know, this proposed idea of changing the Mississippi state flag. Paul, I'm a white male. I was born in the late 60s, went through school in the 70s. And I remember when Dr. King died and so forth. After I entered the Army, but living here in the true South, I seen that color made absolutely no difference. That we're all red on the inside when we bleed. I seen every nationality of people, from Hispanics, Puerto Ricans, Blacks, Asians. And I seen that there's families out there that love their children, they love other people, other nationalities. All this thing with racism and hate, it's preached, or I believe it starts at home. And by changing these symbols of hate, which the Confederate flag certainly represents oppression. I've lived in the South all my life, other than the 5 years that I spent going overseas, but where I'm going with this comment, Paul, is to this question. And I know that the United States is a nation that, that was formed out of oppression in itself. But, Paul, how much is enough? Would you agree or ever think in your mind or consider letting the United States, the American flag, be changed? And if so, I would like to hear your explanation as to why you think that change could take place. And I love this country, Paul. I love college football. I love sports. I love my fellow man. I don't see color. I really don't. But I just want to get your opinion on that, Paul.
Well, thank you. I don't ever see anything because I think it represents too much. And I understand every state flag has a meaning. I do. But sometimes things have to change. Peyton is up next in Arkansas. Peyton, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing?
I am really well. Thank you.
Good. Hey, I'm just trying to wrap my head around the Victoria interview.
Enlighten me, please.
Well, you know, she kept referring back to systemic racism and how we should stop the football season to focus on that. And I'm just trying to – I'm just confused on if she means, like, are we supposed to stop the season so we can all come back together and try and stop racism in 1 year? Or, like, I just was a little lost there.
Yeah, and I think I'm mostly to blame because I knew where she was going because I had read her piece, and the second we started talking, it was like somebody had knocked me over the head, and I had amnesia because I couldn't remember a thing that I had read.
Yeah, and I mean another thing, you know, she kept referring to college players and how they should be paid for their likeness, which I mean I'm all for that, but I think a lot of people overlook the fact that, you know, any D1 college, you're getting your school paid for. And, I mean, which, you know, obviously Trevor Lawrence, you know, the top name guys, they're the ones who are really bringing in the revenue for those colleges. But I think people overlook that sometimes. But
well, thank you very much for sharing. Great to have you on. Let's continue with Chris, who is up. Oh, actually, why don't we take a break, and we'll come back to Chris. All of that coming up next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back on the program, continuing. Let's grab some more calls. Don't forget the commissioner of the SEC joining us shortly. Tony is in Texas. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Hey, I was calling about the flag, but since you had Victoria on, I'm going to help you out with her. She's a millennial.
Please.
She's okay. A millennial, so that's about the sum of it. But she also said that she had a scholarship. Well, if it wasn't for college football, she might have not had her scholarship. And maybe she should be more concerned and write articles about these high school girls that are having to compete with boys now, and that they're losing slots because of that. Maybe she should
in fairness to her, I mean, she's a professor. She is trying to come up with something unique. I was talking to somebody during the break, and they said, did you follow her? I said, not really. But that's okay. I think the fact she could only come up with, I think, three people that supported her theory doesn't make her wrong. It just makes her heavily in the minority. Let's continue with more calls here. And Philip is up next. Hey, Philip.
How you doing, Paul?
I am doing really well. Thanks.
That is great. I just wanted to say I've been listening to you. It's my first time to ever call. But since you were on the Mark and Brian show and you'd had your skit act on Monday morning.
Yeah, that was really the beginning of the start of my radio career. Mark and Brian, very famous team in Birmingham.
We worked third shift, and we could not wait till you come on there on the way home. Me and this other boy, we're both Auburn fans, and we knew when Auburn was going to have it by you, and we knew when you was going to let Alabama have it. And But it was great, man. And I have never called you on anything, but I've listened to you all through these years. But
yeah, those guys went on to Los Angeles and became they had their own TV show on NBC. Really an amazing, amazing successful group.
Lamb. The Mark and Brian?
Yeah, Mark and Brian.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
One thing I could never understand through all those years was how people could accuse you of being an Auburn fan or Alabama fan or, you know, you let everybody have it that you needed to riff on, you riffed on them. And that's what I just love that about you.
Well, thanks for calling. It was fun to talk to you about that. Joseph is in Tupelo, Mississippi.
Hey, Mr. Paul. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for taking my call. It's always great to speak with you. I was just going to speak about the guy, the Clarion Ledger report, Nick Sirius. He was a little wrong on that. Governor Reeves, he steadily said that he's been about, you know, the people of Mississippi should have a vote again. You know, he's for, that's what America's about. There's people voting, democratic, and they're not just legislatures. It should be about the people's voice in something like this, because it's a big issue here. It really is. I mean, it's huge. And your other caller.
I'm not, one thing I've never tried to do is tell people what they should or shouldn't do. But I mean, I do think you have to look at the preponderance of evidence supporting the young people and the universities. I mean, this is not just a single player. I mean, what you saw today in Jackson was unbelievable. I just saw where Faith Hill came out. She's a Mississippian. Right now the people that are standing by the flag are starting to look, I think, in a way that the state doesn't need. But anyway, it's not my fight. We're just here to talk about it. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Final hour, Will Cain will join us, outgoing ESPN host. He'll join us in a minute, and the commissioner of the SEC in a few minutes as well.
Did you know GEICO's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to GEICO. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.